First question was, what are you doing here? We reflected on that question about where God places us. God has placed us where we are, wherever that may be, for His purposes. We are not just simply there to earn money, to work, to go to school, for many other things like that. But God has placed us where we are in our life for a reason. And we can ask ourselves, well, God, why have you placed me here? What do you want me to do? Why am I here? And you can put the word here wherever you might be. Job, home, school, marketplace, here in the sanctuary, wherever you might be. Why am I here? We're not just simply to live our life and go from day to day and hour to hour and just kind of like exist. No, we live on a higher plane than that. We're not just simply coasting along in life. I was reflecting on this first question a little bit the past couple weeks at different points. And I was thinking from the world's perspective how sad it is to go through life and not have a purpose. Why live this life if you just come to the end of it and you've had a house and a job and a few things like that, and you come to the end of your life and it's over? What kind of life is that? As Paul the Apostle says in 1 Corinthians 15, he says, if we eat and drink and we go on our life, what sadness is there in that? We have a greater hope and a greater purpose for that. Once we realize that we are somewhere for God's purpose, then what do we do there? That brings us to the second question this morning. And it's a story that we can look at from the life of Moses. We can look back to the story of Israel. Let's put this in historical perspective before we get to Exodus chapters 3 and 4. But we know when we study the Bible, we go back in history, we find that the people of Israel developed actually as a people down in Egypt. Abraham and then his descendants, Isaac and Jacob, had been wanderers. They had wandered all over the Middle East, migrating down through what we call today Israel, touched down into Egypt a few times and so on. And then one of Jacob's 12 sons, Joseph, was taken down into slavery into Egypt. You remember that part of the story in the book of Genesis? Well, the other brothers joined Joseph down in Egypt. And for many centuries, up to 300 or 400 years, the family was down there in Egypt, and they began to grow bigger and bigger. Well, we come to the book of Exodus, and we find that there was a new Pharaoh who did not know about what Joseph had done for Egypt. And so he needed workers to build all the pyramids and all the great structures that we still see today. He needed slaves. And so he enslaved the different peoples who had come down south over the centuries. And part of that great group of people were the descendants of Abraham. And so this is how the Israelites became enslaved by the Egyptians. God had raised up this particular person named Moses to free the people of Israel from the slavery. Most of us know that Bible history, but it's helpful just to get a perspective of what's happening. So we come to the end of chapter 2 of the book of Exodus, and just looking at the very last words of chapter 2, during verse 23, during that long period, the king of Egypt died. The Israelites groaned in their slavery and cried out. Their cry for help because of their slavery went up to God. God heard their groaning, and He remembered His covenant with Abraham, with Isaac, and with Jacob. So God looked on the Israelites and was concerned about them. God chose someone who happened to be at that time just a wandering, shepherd out wandering in the hills of the area of Moab. And so the story of Moses begins in a new way in chapter 3. This man who had grown up as a prince of Egypt had fled after he had killed an Egyptian. Now he had spent 40 years as a shepherd. 40 years in Egypt, now 40 years as a shepherd. He's getting up there in years. He's, according to some calculations, 80 years old now. We might call him an old man. He's out taking care of his father-in-law's sheep. Chapter 3 begins. He was busy minding his own business, comfortable with his life of shepherding. Into our routines of life, God breaks through and challenges us to serve Him. To serve Him sometimes in new ways. Sometimes calling us from our life of comfort into something new. We cannot miss out on those burning bush experiences that God gives us. Do not ignore when God speaks to you. This story is all about responding to God's call. And so let's look then at Moses and the burning bush in chapter 3. At the very, some of the last words of chapter 25, God looked on the Israelites and was concerned about them. God knew what the people needed. The situation is that God had heard the prayers of his people, and now he was ready to answer them. So Moses is tending the flock, and he comes across the burning bush, the bush that was not being burnt up, but it was on fire. You know this story very well, perhaps. Maybe you've seen movies about it. I always go back to the Charlton Heston Ten Commandments movie. Sometimes I watch that great movie and it almost brings me to tears. Little imagination in that story, but still it helps us to get the vividness of this. God's plan was to use a shepherd named Moses. God had a plan for Moses even from his birth. When Moses wanted to run away from his problems, he even seemed to run away from his problems in Egypt, God did not give up on him. So he goes to this bush and is awed by it. God drew Moses to himself through this miraculous burning bush. At first, Moses was curious, but then he saw the power of God. So looking down through this, we'll just go through this passage a little bit. Verse 4. When the Lord saw that Moses had gone over to look, God called to him from within the bush, "Moses, Moses." Sometimes God calls us by name. How do we know God's talking to us? Have you ever wondered that? Why is God talking to me? Or how can I know God's talking to me? I have never had a burning bush experience. But sometimes I have had this deep impression within me that God is speaking to me. He has spoken through pastors, preachers. He's spoken to me through His Word. There is a deep inner sense that there's a voice, an awareness. But in this case, Moses had an audible voice. And Moses said, "Here I am." Those are important words for us to say. Here I am. Recognize that God is indeed speaking to you. Well, God's plan is laid out then in verses 9 and 10. "And now the cry of the Israelites has reached me, and I have seen the way the Egyptians are oppressing them. So now, go." One word. Go. Go. "I am sending you to Pharaoh to bring my people, the Israelites, out of Egypt." Well, Moses then doesn't take very long and gives a reply. Verse 11. "Who am I that I should go to Pharaoh and bring the Israelites out of Egypt?" Have you ever had that kind of response to God? Well, God, who am I? I don't have all the education. I'm not a good speaker. I cannot speak it. I cannot do that. I don't have the skills. I'm afraid. We come up with all kinds of excuses not to go where God has called us to go. The key words, though, appear in verse 12. "And God said, I will be with you." Those are the words that we need to hear wherever God calls and leads us. I will be with you. In fact, Jesus said almost the same words to us, didn't he? As his followers in Matthew chapter 28, verses 19 and 20. Go and make disciples. And then at the end of those verses it says, and lo, I will be with you always. God never calls us to do something that he's going to leave us alone to do. He is always there with us wherever he calls us and guides us to go. God will answer our prayers at just the right time. These people of Israel had been enslaved for a while. They were struggling. Can you imagine trying to build one of those pyramids? It was probably around this time that some of those great monuments were built in Egypt. Probably some of those were built by the Israelites. And God came at just the right time with just the right person. In 1 John chapter 5, verses 14 and 15, and this is the confidence that we have towards him, that if we ask anything according to his will, he hears us. And if we know that he hears us in whatever we ask, we know that we have the request that we have asked of him. God will answer our prayers at just the right time. It may not be when we think we need the answer, but it's when we need the answer. He will be there for us. Isaiah chapter 65, verse 24. Before they call, I will answer. While they are yet speaking, I will hear. Never think that your prayers will go unanswered, that God does not hear. And then Isaiah chapter 49, verse 8. Thus says the Lord, in a favorable time I have answered you, and in a day of salvation I have helped you. And I will keep you and give you for a covenant of the people, to restore the land, to make them inherit the desolate heritages. Psalm 145, verse 18. The Lord is near to all who call on him, to all who call on him in truth. God often uses the people around us to answer his prayers. God may answer his prayers through us for someone else. We may be the answer to someone else's prayer. Our obedience to the call to go may be the factor for someone else's answered prayer. We may be that instrument. Moses was the instrument through which God was going to lead the people out of Egyptian slavery. Therefore, God tells Moses, go, I am sending you. First, though, let's look at some of Moses' responses. First, Moses needs to know God. Verses 13 through 15. Moses said to God, suppose I go to the Israelites and say to them, the God of your fathers has sent me to you. And they ask me, what is his name? Then, what shall I tell them? The first thing that we need to know is, who is sending us? Well, God said to Moses, I am who I am. This is what you are to say to the Israelites. I am has sent me. Bible scholars have long debated what this means, the I am. The divine name that Jews do not speak even today, Yahweh, is derived from the Hebrew meaning I am. The way I've come to think about this is that God is beyond definition. When you simply say I am, it's an incomplete thought, isn't it? I am what? You always have to have something after it. In technical terms, we call that a predicate. I am blank. You always have to have something after that, isn't it? I am a father. I am hungry. I am tired. No, just kidding. No, I should have had pizza before with all the youth. But we always put something after it. There is nothing after it here. God is simply the I am. There is nothing that can define God. God is beyond definition. Another way to understand this, some Bible scholars say, is I am who you need me to be. I will be who you need me to be. I am the I am. And so God is giving the definition, describing himself beyond human understanding. Moses needs to know and experience the I Am before he'll ever be able to do anything. Second, Moses needs to know the message. Verses 16 through 20. I won't read all of this, but God describes here in this passage what Moses needs to do. He is to go and tell the elders and gather the people and to tell them that they are now free from slavery. We are held in bondage as well. We are bound to sin. We are slaves to sin. Paul the Apostle tells us in Romans chapter 6. Are the members of our body, our flesh, how we live in this world, we are bound by slavery to flesh and sin. And we need to have this freedom as well, a freedom from our slavery. There's many other things that hold people into slavery, habits, sometimes our past, sometimes our pains, sometimes broken relationships. Slavery is just part of our human existence, but God calls us to freedom. Third, Moses needs to learn to trust God. Chapter 4 is all about learning to trust God. So after God tells Moses what he needs to do, he tells him the plan. Moses answered, "Well, what if they do not believe me or listen to me? That they do not believe that the Lord appeared to me." Moses will give several excuses. First of all, he says, "What if?" Don't say "what if." That's a dangerous thing to say, isn't it? Well, what if this doesn't work out? Well, what if the people don't listen to me? What if they don't? You know, and it just goes on and on. What if? That's what Moses says. What if? God gives us just what we need for the journey. There's often a gap between what God calls us to do and where we see ourselves. That gap is what we call faith, and faith growing, and character formation. You see, we see ourselves back here, and God calls us to here. And we see ourselves here, we say, "Oh, I can't go there." Well, God's going to call us beyond where we are because He wants us to grow and rely more on Him. He wants our faith and our hope and our character to grow. And sometimes to go from here to here is not easy. If it was easy, our faith wouldn't grow. And so God calls us beyond that. This gap, there's often a gap between what God calls us to do and the abilities that we think we have. And so we need to trust in God between these points, between where we are and where He calls us. This is how we will grow. So Moses saw himself here, and God was calling him here. So he comes up with his first excuse in verse 1. What if they do not believe me or listen to me? His second excuse, "Pardon your servant, Lord." Verse 10, "I have never been eloquent, neither in the past nor since you've spoken to your servant." In other words, he says, "I am not a good speaker. I can never go in front of Pharaoh. I can never go in front of the people. I can't do this. I am inadequate." He comes up with a third excuse in verse 13. "Pardon your servant, Lord. Please send someone else." We may have the same types of fears in sharing our faith with other people and doing what God calls us to do. So first excuse, "No one will ever believe me." Second excuse, "I can't talk well. I never went to Bible college or seminary. I can't preach. I can't teach. I can't share my testimony. I just can't talk. I'm not a talker." And number 3, "Someone else can do it. Send someone else, Lord, not me." Do you ever have these excuses in your life? I think we all do. I've had them at different points in my life. "No one will believe me. I can't talk very well. And send someone else." Well, what is God's response to all of these? God's resources for us. God responds to Moses' excuse each time with a question. God answers a challenge to Moses and wants him to rethink his excuses. So let's go back to these excuses. His first excuse, no one will listen to me. What does God say? What is in your hand? What do you have that I have given you? What have I provided for you? This is a question of passion. God has given to each person specific talents, desires, and gifts. This makes every one of us unique. We shouldn't try to minister the same exact way as someone else. You cannot do what your neighbor does. You cannot do what I do. I cannot do what you do. None of us are exactly the same. We need to trust with what God has placed into our hands right now. We ask for God to do miracles, but the miracle is right in our hand, and we don't even see it. We want God to do great things for us, but we fail to step out in faith and to trust Him. We see so many people struggling around us. They are burdened with debt, broken and bruised relationships, discouraged. A lot of things like that are happening. But we fail to see how God wants to use us in these situations. The key question that I've raised for us today is, what is in your hand? What has God placed in your hand to be used for Him? God doesn't need our abilities, our education, our experience, our personality. God uses just who we are, who He created us to be. Ordinary people doing great things in this world to change it. God uses every one of us in the situation where we are. 1 Corinthians chapter 1, Paul wrote to the Corinthians some interesting words. He says, "Brothers and sisters, think of what you were when you were called. Not many of you were wise by human standards. Not many were influential. Not many were of noble birth. God chose the foolish things of the world to shame the wise. God chose the weak things of the world to shame the strong. God chose the lowly things of this world and the despised things and the things that are not to nullify the things that are, so that no one may boast before Him. It is because of Him you are in Christ, who has become for us wisdom from God. That is our righteousness, holiness, and redemption. Therefore, as it is written, let the one who boasts, boast in the Lord." What Paul is saying is, look who we are. There's nothing really special about us. We're not very smart. We're not very strong. All of us are failures in one way or another. But look what God is doing in us through Jesus Christ. We can do great things because it's not our strength that we're doing it by, but it's His strength. So the first excuse, what is in your hand? What has God given you? Look at what He has given you. The second excuse, let's look down in verse 10. Moses says, "Well, pardon your servant. I've never been an eloquent speaker." Well, what is God's response? Who created you? Who gave you human beings their mouths? Who makes them deaf or mute? Who gives them sight or makes them blind? Is it not I, the Lord? And then God says again, now go. I give you all the equipment you need to do what I've called you to do. You may not have many gifts or talents or abilities, but every single Christian can be mightily used for God. God uses ordinary people in extraordinary ways. God uses all sorts of people, all sorts of gifts and talents and abilities. Some of our brothers and sisters, you may not be a pastor or a preacher, but you are gifted in other ways, and you're going to use those this week. I think back on all the youth that came this past week. Man, let me tell you, there's a lot of paint to clean up. They missed the wall a lot. And I'm still going to be cleaning up for a while. And sometimes, I guess we're just going to have paint where it's not supposed to be. But God used them to touch our youth. God used them to help us in many ways. God can use you in many ways. What opportunities has God given you now? God has given me enough time to accomplish His will for today. Don't think you're too busy, because God has given you time today to do His will. In John chapter 6, we read about the story of the feeding of 5,000. And Jesus was saying, well, go find some food. And then Andrew brings this little boy and says, here is a boy with 5 small barley loaves and 2 small fish. But then they give the excuse. Well, that little boy with his small little lunch was adequate to do great things on that day. And then in Acts chapter 17, Paul's in Athens, and he's looking for an opportunity to share the gospel. And then we read in chapter 17, verse 23, I found an altar with this inscription. Paul said, saw what he had there, and he saw the opportunity in that pagan temple to say, the altar to the unknown God. He took advantage of that situation. And then we read about the story of Nehemiah in chapter 1, verse 11. He's the cupbearer to the king. What kind of opportunity does he have? He's basically a slave. But yet, we read in Nehemiah chapter 1, verse 11, he says, I was cupbearer to the king. That was his excuse to do mighty things. Matthew chapter 20, verse 30, we read, when they heard that Jesus was passing by, they shouted. They took advantage of the situation where they were. And then 1 Samuel chapter 17, verse 40, then he took the staff in his hand and chose 5 stones from the stream. Little boy David killed the Goliath with what he had in his hand. Judges chapter 7, verse 20. The 3 companies blew the trumpets and smashed the jars, and they defeated the enemies with what they had right there in their hands. Remember that God has created you, and He will enable you to do what He's called you to do. The third excuse, verse 14. Well, Moses said, pardon your servant, Lord, please send someone else. Then the Lord's anger burned against Moses and said, what about your brother Aaron the Levite? God does not leave us alone when we feel inadequate, but He will bring someone alongside of us to help us in those times. Look at the assets that God has given you. List them out. Where you are, when you are, and what you are. What has God given to you right now in your hands to carry out His will? The pastor was shaking hands at the end of the service at the door, and there were some new people in the church. And the pastor asked one of the ladies there, just kind of in a conversation, getting to know the visitors before they were leaving. And he says, well, what do you do for a living? Do you have a job or something? And the pastor was expecting some kind of explanation, like, you know, maybe she was a school teacher or whatever. And so she was very clever, and she responded this way, I'm a disciple of Jesus Christ, cleverly disguised as a machine operator. This lady knew who she was. Now, what kind of job do you have? Or what, you might be in school or whatever. What would you say? What is your job? What do you do? I'm a follower of Jesus, clothed in disguise as a businessman, as a construction worker, as a mother, a grandmother, as a student. First and foremost, we are disciples, and we use whatever place God has placed us as an excuse to be His followers. So this morning, what is in your hand? Think about that this week. Where has God placed you? And what is He calling you to do? Don't come up with the excuses like Moses, but be obedient. God will be there. He will never leave us nor forsake us.